Or the one that sees Sean Hennis for the MMA Torchcast for September 8th, 2007. We are here doing the post-show wrap-up for UFC 75, champion versus champion. Joining me are Mike Jarslick and Jerry Cadillac. Mike, how's things?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, Sean. How you doing?
I'm great. Jerry, how about yourself?
I'm still burning up like a tea kettle at a 4 o'clock tea in London, England over the Hamill Bisping decision.
Excellent analogy.
Thank you. I do the best I can. Good to be back,
right,
gentlemen.
Yes, yes. Good to have all three of us back together. Well, let's get right into this thing. We've got. I'll hit the prelims first. They weren't televised. Actually, none of the prelims were televised. But let's just run down them in case those of you are wondering what the results were. We'll run on them real quick. And if you are waiting to see them on UFC On Demand, just plug your ears for a second. But we had Jess Lee Adan taking out Anthony Torres in the first round by TKO. We had Dennis Siver taking out Naoyuki Kotani in the second round, TKO as well. Thiago Silva beating Tomas Durval in the second round by TKO. In what sounds to be, from what I read, it looks like it was a heck of a fight. Looking forward to seeing that one. And we had Gleison Tibau taking the unanimous decision from Terry Edom, hometown guy. Of course, that was the only decision that didn't go to the hometown guy, but we'll get to that later. So into the main fights. We started off with Houston Alexander and Alessio Zaccara. Interesting fight from my perspective. Jerry, let's get your thoughts on that one.
You know, I picked Zaccara to win this fight. I thought that technically on his feet he would be able to pick apart Alexander, and boy, was I wrong. I tell you, Alexander made a believer out of me. He has got some heavy hands, creates distance well, scores with his knees, has a killer instinct. I can't say we know much about his ground game yet, but boy, oh boy, when you can hit like that. It answers some questions. I thought he was very impressive, and Rogan, with his hyperbole and over the top exclamations of "He's for real," he is for real. I mean, he's a banger, and I look forward to seeing him fight again. He certainly makes it exciting. Very impressed with Houston Alexander tonight,
Mike.
Yeah, I thought Alexander looked impressive tonight. The one thing that kind of bugged me was Joe Rogan saying that he is for real. And we don't know that yet. We've seen him fight less than 2 minutes in the UFC so far. And one of them was a fight with Keith Jardine that I still look at as being a fluke, because Jardine nailed him with the right hand early in that fight and had Alexander on Queer Street before he came back and ended up knocking Jardine out.
Yeah, that's a good point, Cyrus. I mean, that's a good point. Let me qualify. From a fan's perspective, he's exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? I mean, if he goes out to bang, he brings. Is he a title contender? No, probably not yet. But he's fun to watch, and he's the sort of guy like, I'm ready to see him fight again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens once he gets into the later rounds, because he had fought on a lot of Midwest shows like Extreme Challenge, and I've never seen him fight on those shows, but from what I heard from people that were there, was he never really looked that impressive.
Really? Wow.
It's very interesting. I might also throw in there that Jardine made no bones about the fact that he was not taking Houston Alexander very seriously. Now, all that having been said, Alexander's obviously got some power. I mean, you had Drew McFedries in there with Zaccara, and obviously McFedries did end up winning that fight by TKO, but he didn't knock out Zaccara, and Alexander, he really took him out in just over a minute. So, he's obviously got some power. I think, like you said, Jerry, we haven't seen his ground game yet, but definitely an intriguing guy, definitely somebody that the fans will pay to see, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, Shawnee. I think, the name of the game is entertainment, and from the fans' perspective, from what puts butts in the seats, you want to see a guy like Houston Alexander out there throwing leather. And if he eats one, like he did from Jardine, or if he's making somebody eat his, like he did tonight, don't want to say it doesn't matter, but he's a guy that clearly has no qualms about mixing it up and going into harm's way.
Yeah. Mike, where did Alessio Sakara go from here?
Who knows? Alessio Sakara has had a rough run of it in the UFC. He got triangled by Dean Lister. Okay.
Beautiful triangle, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That was a textbook triangle.
Yep.
And lost to Drew McFedries. He lost to someone back in, I believe, June, or I believe it was last April to, he won last April. And,
yep.
On the England show, and I believe that was by knockout in the first round. But
fight. It was Victor Alamaki. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. His only really big win of his career was Elvis Sinisek, which isn't much. The guy's basically enhancement talent.
Yep.
Enhancement talent. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sinisek is one of those guys that, you know, when they bring him in, that he's there to make someone else look good.
Yeah. See, for example, Mike Bisping and Forrest Griffin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Sakara, I think you got it right. I mean, I don't know that we'll see him back anytime soon. You know, he's a guy that he's obviously got some heavy hands. He's a pro boxer. But, you know, they put him in there with strikers, and he's lost to them. You know, Drew McFedries and Houston Alexander, they're primarily strikers, and he got knocked out in the first round by both of them. Valimaki, not as impressive on the feet, and Sakara made short work of him. But, you know, other than that, you know, you got the Sinisek fight, and you got a no contest against Ron Fairclough in his debut where, you know, Sakara, he was winning that fight, but, you know, and then he got kicked in the groin and couldn't continue. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where we maybe they would bring in Sakara as enhancement talent now. You know, maybe he's he's a guy that build people up.
I tell you, the division's getting kind of crowded. You know, I mean,
yeah, 205 is big, man.
Listening, just in the evidence that you know we put out during the last 2 minutes, do you keep Sakara?
Yeah.
I mean, does he get another contract? I think, I can't remember where he is fight-wise, but I thought this would be theoretically his new fight deal.
Yeah, I think it's the
5th. The 5th or 6th. I don't have it in front of me, but.
No, you're right.
I don't think he's got much. I mean, the division is getting deeper and deeper all the time. I mean, the title fight tonight was a very, you know, pretty decent fight, and it's a deep division. I'm not sure Sakara can weather this loss, and who's going to fight? I mean, like I say, who's going to fight next?
Yeah. How about Alexander, Jerry? What do you want to see out of Alexander next?
I'd like to see Alexander keep banging against guys that want to bang. I can't remember if where Martin's going to go from here. I wouldn't mind seeing him stand in there against a guy like Griffin. I'm looking for an entertaining fight from him. You know, Ortiz has got Evans coming up. I wouldn't mind seeing him throw against Ortiz. I think that would see what he's got on the ground. I'd like to see Alexander start fighting some of these entry level guys in the bottom area of the top 10 for the pure entertainment factor of it.
Yeah. I tell you what, had this fight happened before Liddell and Jardine got signed, I think he'd have a pretty good shot at fighting Chuck Liddell instead of Jardine.
Chuck Liddell has fights in front of him, though. I mean, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be Alexander Liddell. I mean, because...
Yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, on paper, I'd like to see that, because... Oh, can you imagine? I mean,
yeah.
I get tingly just thinking about that. A lot of fireworks there.
Yeah, I just mean he probably would have had a better shot of signing that fight rather than Jardine had it been, you know, had they not been in such a hurry to get a main event for that event. And obviously it's 2 weeks from tonight, but, you know, if the timing was different, he might do something different.
MMA is funny that way, though. I mean, you don't know where things are going to go. I mean, I think most people are kind of counting Jardine out in that fight against Liddell, and I'm not sure you can count Jardine out in that fight yet.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, I think, and you and I talked about this about 5 months ago. We talked about Chuck and his style of fighting, and we agreed that, you know, when Chuck hits his decline, he's going to decline rapidly. And I remember the conversation. And I'm wondering if Jackson exposed him a little bit. And to me, Jardine is another guy that can get to Chuck.
Yep. I went on record and picked Jardine. I don't know if I'll stick with that pick forever, but the preliminary thought process makes me go with Jardine a little bit.
I think he's a solid underdog. I mean,
he's
in a big spot, but I don't think it's inconceivable that he's going to stand in the pocket and trade with Chuck and come out on top.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay. Well, we've beat that fight down a little bit. Any final words on this one?
I think one of the better fights for the fans to see Houston Alexander in would be against Shogun.
Yeah.
I think that could be very exciting, but what I'd like to see next for him, and this is if Keith Jardine loses, is for him to take on Jardine again.
Yeah, actually, I agree with that, because, I'd like to see what, obviously Jardine wouldn't take him out twice.
I'll tell you, that'd be a compelling little series, because let's say Jardine wins. Do you have him go a third time? A rubber match? Do you have you guys kind of stay in limbo? Charles, I agree with you. I think that'd be a great matchup, but I think Shogun has bigger fish to fry, and that's a ways down the road. Plus, Alexander's not. I think he's 35, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he's the sort of guy who's going to sit 3-4 years in the UFC.
Well, I didn't notice. I didn't even notice that.
I think he's 35.
Yeah.
Not that you can't be old and fight, but
right.
Tough to be a newcomer at 35.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look at the next fight. For my money. Had this one gone even another round, at the same pace, it would have been fight of the night. We got Marcus Davis and Paul Taylor, which I think all of us were looking forward to. What a round that was. Jerry, give me your take on this one.
Great fight. Honestly, Sean, the first two fights of the night, and I thought they were pretty reasonably paced off the top of the show, were, put your butt in the couch and watch these fights, attention-grabbing fights. I mean, the Alexander fight was bang, 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 and then these guys come out, and man, did Taylor crack Davis. Oh,
yeah.
I thought that was over. Eve Levine was looking down there, and I thought for sure he was going to step in and break that up. Full credit to Davis for hanging in there, quote-unquote intelligently defending himself, and coming back and getting the win. I'm a big fan of Marcus Davis. I think that he's got tremendous upside in that stacked welterweight division, and I think that he could potentially become a contender and give some guys some trouble in the top echelons of that division. To take a shot like that and come back and win in the first round, boof. 9 out of 10 guys, I think, eating that head kick would have been done. I thought it was great. I mean, the first 45 minutes of that tonight's show, I was for free. It was great. I mean, especially after sitting through that stinker, UFC 72 back in June. It was a great start to the evening. Mike?
I've been very impressed with Davis in this run in the UFC, just for the sheer fact that he was probably the guy I was least impressed with during the Ultimate Fighter 2. He just got owned by Joe Stevenson on the show.
Yeah.
And then in the finale, he didn't look very good against Melvin Gallard.
Yep.
And he just came on really strong lately.
Yeah. Yeah, I was highly impressed with Davis here. I'm a big fan of Paul Taylor too. Taylor's a lot of fun to watch. I think he's got a future as well. Real young guy. But wow, I mean this was a great fight. I mean, you don't get much more action, much more back and forth than that in 4 minutes. To go back in there, not only to take that head kick and weather the storm, but to get the mount and then transitioned into an armbar. That was fantastic. Just great performance by Davis.
I agree.
One of the things I was very impressed with, when Davis got knocked down, the first thing he started doing was, Taylor had side control at the time, and he started working for a hip escape and took some punishment in order to fight his way back to guard.
Yeah.
And he did the right thing there.
A lot of composure.
Yeah, that was the key for him, and Joe Rogan mentioned it, was the composure. I mean, he never even, it was like he was fine, even though he took that big head kick, he never lost it, he was always in the fight.
He was eating some fists on the bottom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was getting beat up, and you saw Levine kind of lean in, and then back away. And it was right there that he actually tried. He turned it around in that instant. I think that if he had taken one or two more punches when Levine was leaning in, that fight would have been over. You had another upset winner.
Yeah.
But
we see it quite a bit where, you know, that same sequence happens, and then the guy eats some punches, and they go limp for half a second, and they call him. That's it. Or, you know, they move their hands for a second, take a few flush punches, and that's it. It's over. But this one, I mean, you know, Davis never really stopped defending himself. He was close. And it's like you said, Levine was right there, did a great job. You know, it certainly could have been an early stoppage. But, you know,
would have been a
good job by Levine. And, yeah.
Would have been unjustified. I mean, you could justify a stoppage right there easily.
Yeah. But, yeah, good stuff. Good, real good stuff.
Yeah, Levine has improved a lot as a ref recently.
I agree.
And, you know, part of it is probably
a lot of a lot of quick stoppages, and ever since the Nogueira Herring fight, he has laid off it a little and hasn't called the fight off too fast.
Yeah, and it's probably got something to do with. I mean, you see him on pretty much any show you watch now. I mean, he's almost like you don't only see him as often as Herb Dean. You know, he's everywhere.
Poor Herb Dean. he's as snake bit as he gets in terms of these controversial referee involvement matches.
Good referee matches.
You know, I thought it's a little bit of a theme that tonight I thought we saw a couple guys that were, you know, Ultimate Fighter fighters who have really changed or improved their game to where they are legitimate, good, solid MMA in the hunt fighters, where you can see where they've improved and where they're going to improve to still. Davis, I like his game. I like his game. He's confident. He looks the right size. He moves well. He has good angles. Obviously, he can take a kick. He can take some punishment.
Yep.
Good composure. Good, you know, good ground game. Can, you know, he's got solid striking, good power. Tell you, there's no reason why, you know, you look down the road 2 or 3 years and Marcus Davis is not somewhere near the top of the food chain, to use Joe Rogan's term, in the welterweight division.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, and I know Mike and I were talking about this with Fedor. What makes him so great is that we've seen him in trouble so many times, but he always wins. And Marcus Davis showed tonight that he can get in trouble and he can get out of trouble.
Well, you know, when you're Fedor and you're fighting Zulo Zinho, you shouldn't get in trouble in the first place.
See, I knew you were gonna come in with a fatal.
You fall into the trap that all these other pilots fall into on the board. You know, shame on you. Shame on you. Well, in fact, where was Fedor today? I was ready. You know, Joe Rogan must have referenced Fedor 3 or 4 times in the first 30 minutes of the show.
I think he was already
ready. I was ready for Dana White to trot out at about 10:15 Eastern to announce Fedor Emelianenko is our newest UFC signing. It was so. You didn't see Dana White tonight at all.
Nope.
You know, he had to pop in at the end of the show, but that was it. It was a weird show that way.
Yeah.
I thought.
And, you know, it was kind of funny that they mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, Goldberg, of course, with his hyperbole, saying that, you know, Jackson Henderson would be one of the first of many, many, you know, dream fights to see who was the best in the world. And, of course, Henderson is the only other title holder they have from Pride. I just thought that was funny.
That's true, but I thought it was odd from the perspective that you have essentially two guys who made their name in Pride.
Yeah, yeah. And then
the UFC
yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm not sure if it was a UFC Pride unification as much as it was. I mean, it was, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, Quinn Jackson is a Pride name.
Yeah.
You know, it was best fought forever ago in UFC, but this is a Pride fight. This is a Pride fight.
I think it was less UFC versus Pride than Silva Liddell is going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll become unification sort of things when, again, you have a UFC guy who is a modern UFC guy against one of the imports, which he'll come.
Couture Fedor.
The Couture Fedor. I mean, he pumped at Fedor. You and Fedor. You got this man crush on Fedor.
I do.
You do. I don't know what it is. I understand. Trust me, I understand. But 2005 was a lot. I only had one kid 2 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Well, actually, 2 years. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Listen, there would have been nothing that made me happier tonight than to see them trot out in the middle of the cage with Fedor, the Last Emperor, Emelianenko. You know, I would have applauded as loud as anybody. But it didn't happen.
Yeah. Anyway, any last words on this fight, Mike?
No, I'm good.
All right. Yeah, Davis Taylor, that's what we're talking about. But I think Davis, you're not going to be able to keep him off the main card now, which is good, because he's an exciting guy to watch.
Exciting fighter. He's a banger.
Hopefully we can see him in December, maybe taking on a middle to upper tier guy. That'd be nice.
Well, I think they're going to be saving him for the European shows.
You know, it seems that way. He was in Belfast, yeah. And now here he is here. So that may be the case. Let's move on to the next fight. We had Czech Congo taking on Mirko Krokop. Mike, start us off with this one.
Well, I saw this fight as Krokop being pretty dominant the first round and sort of playing his game, but Congo did a great job adapting for the second and third round. And he landed quite a few knees to the body during the fight that sort of took Krokop out of his game and ended up getting a unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, he peppered Krokop in the body throughout the whole fight, knees and kicks. Just walked him down and made him go backwards like they were talking about and just took him off his game, and Krokop just looked bewildered. Almost the whole time. Jerry, what was your thoughts on the fight?
I was surprised how much bigger Congo was than Krokop. I mean, I saw
he
it on
did,
Twitter.
He, yeah.
But Krokop looked small. Like
he did. He made him look small.
Congo made him look small. And I think if you watch the first round, you could see Congo's confidence build, where he was, I can win this fight.
Yeah,
I can outstrike this guy. I'm bigger. I'm bigger. I'm just as fast. I can outstrike this guy. And Krokop just does not look confident in the cage at all. It's the nice thing about on demand, and here's my show for the UFC, I guess. Is if you pull up Krokop's fights from Pride, he is the aggressor. He pushes guys around the ring. He sets up his own angles. He sets the distance, and he lands his kicks. And he just does not have that sense. In the cage, you can just see. Even when he fought Eddie Sanchez, Sanchez was running from him, and you think it was a, but you would think that this would be a chance, that would be Krokop, powering him down, which eventually he did. But in spite of Gonzaga, he couldn't dictate distance in the cage. And I'll tell you, tonight, after 2 or 3 minutes, he really couldn't dictate distance against Congo either. And Congo, all of a sudden, I wish they would have had the camera on him. At least I didn't see it anyway. I wish they had the camera on Congo in between rounds. So I'm sure that in his corner saying, you can win this fight. And he came out. And Congo won the fight. I'm not sure. I tell you, I'm not convinced Krokop's got a future in the UFC in terms of who's he going to beat right now. I mean, he's a devastating striker. I don't think there's any question about it. But right now, you just have Chief Congo, who, by all accounts, is as one-dimensional as it gets. And he lost. I mean, he clearly lost that fight. I mean, there wasn't any question about it. And to be truthful, Rogan called it that Krokop truly was winning the fight on the ground. And I didn't think Krokop's ground game was that impressive. I mean, it was good. But against Congo, who has essentially no ground game, who's Krokop going to beat in the upper echelon of the heavyweights right now? Is he going to beat Tim Sylvia? Is he going to beat Andre Arlovski?
Yes.
Is he going to beat Brandon Vera? I mean, seriously, Sean Judge, he doesn't look comfortable in the cage at all.
Yeah.
He doesn't look comfortable. I mean, he looks like a fish out of water. In a ring, I think it's different. But I think the cage is in Krokop's head, and he just doesn't look comfortable. He doesn't look comfortable setting up his angles.
Oh. Yeah.
At all.
Mike, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, the one thing about Krokop is he's come back from losses like this before. I mean, he had the loss to Randleman, he had the loss to Fedor, and the one that was most similar to this was the loss to Mark Hunt. It was a guy that Krokop could go in there, and if he got him on the ground, could dominate. And he didn't do that. It was a lot bigger of a fighter. They moved forward on him, and Krokop just didn't fight his fight and go in there with a good game plan. And I just think it's something that he can adapt to over time, and I think he'll probably be a guy that he may never win a championship in the UFC, but he's still one of the more dangerous guys that can beat anyone in that division.
Yeah, I agree. Mike, I guess I would ask you this. If you're fighting Chuck Tango, what's your game plan?
Take him down.
Yeah. Allegedly, I mean, I had heard that Krokop had, you know, bought a cage, was working on ground game, was working on elbows, and he didn't see really much of it at all tonight.
He fought himself Dean Lister, too.
Lister, who is a very good teacher and a very good practitioner. I mean, and it's not like Congo's got this insane sprawl and takedown defense. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Ironically, I thought Krokop looked his best that he's looked in the UFC in the first round. And then after that, I mean, it's like we were talking about, Congo just imposed his will. And, you know, it seems to me, and, you know, I could be a little bit off on this, but, you know, Fedor gave the world the game plan to beat Mirko Krokop when he fought him. And it looked like, you know, Congo used that game plan, you know, keep him moving backwards and use the strikes to keep him off balance. I mean, you know, Congo walked him down and peppered his body, and Krokop had no answer for him. I mean, they got on the ground, and Congo was able to reverse position even on him. I mean, go ahead, Sean. No, I was just going to say, it seemed like, you know, Congo, like we talked about, who has a very limited ground game, obviously better than it was against Carmelo Moreiro. I think this Czech Congo makes short work of Carmelo Moreiro, but, you know, still, Krokop's been doing the groundwork a lot longer than Congo has. I mean, one would presume anyway.
So from the second round, you could see Congo had no fear of being taken down by Krokop, number one, and number two, had no fear of being struck by him either. I mean, because whatever strikes Krokop kind of mounted, Congo blocked and just kept pushing him backwards. And it makes you wonder at some point you would have thought maybe Krokop faints and shoots, you know, just to change it up a little bit. And there was just nothing. I mean, and you can see Krokop was so, so undersized, but was it a size disadvantage that I think you got to improvise your game somewhere to try to get it in your favor. And I didn't see any of that.
The other thing that didn't look very impressive with Krokop was his ground game. It didn't look like, you know, this is someone that was training with Dean Lister. This looked like someone that bought the Dean Lister DVD, which only had like four techniques on it.
Right. I agree with Mike that Krokop is going to adapt. It'll take him some time, but that he'll be all right. He probably, unless something weird happens, I don't think he does win a title. But he should be able to win a few fights in the UFC eventually. Eventually will be, but I think he's, you know,
right now,
if he's dedicated enough to still fighting, I think he'll be able to do it. But,
he couldn't beat Couture right now.
No, he couldn't beat Couture right now. Nobody beats Couture right now. No, I don't think a lot of people beat Couture right now, though.
That's true. But I'm saying, let me qualify it a little further. I'm not sure how many of the top three or four heavyweights you name in the UFC right now that Krokop beats.
Well, I agree. But at the same time, this is the same guy that just beat Josh Barnett, you know, a year ago.
Right. Josh Barnett, who is not in the UFC.
Not in the UFC, but
a strong fighter. A very good fighter in Pride. No question about it. Apples to apples. We've seen this, you know, I would argue that Krokop, in a ring, beats Chick Congo. In Pride. The 10 minutes, in an environment he feels comfortable in, finds a way to beat Chick Congo. Not in a cage. It just looks that way. He looks like a fish out of water. He just does. I mean, it's amazing to watch his old fights, even the fight against Fedor, where he fought a great fight. And yeah, Federer definitely, you're right, had the game plan to beat him. But Krokop did some damage.
yeah, he did.
And he fought a great fight. And he just does not look like the same fighter in the cage. He just doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
the fighter he can come over, Sean, I would argue that Krokop looks the most uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that might be is just the flaky athlete syndrome. Okay, Krokop just has a very strange personality, and he may come out for his next fight, look completely comfortable, and start tearing things up again. And it wouldn't
I think eventually he will. I agree.
Yeah, and that's why I qualified it with if he's dedicated to it, because we heard he said after winning the open weight Grand Prix last year in Pride that he was going to retire if he didn't win this whole thing. So that calls into question how dedicated is he to succeeding in the UFC. There was a question after he lost to Gonzaga whether he would retire. Not much question, but it was still there,
Right.
So I think that's a big part of it. If he's dedicated, then, he can obviously be a force. But,
yeah.
You go ahead.
No, I'm saying it's not like he's not successful in other aspects of his
yeah.
life. I'm sure the guy is a parliament member. He's been a professional soccer player. He is revered in his home country. I mean, we're not talking about a guy that's going to go, be a fry cook at Denny's. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But, he has a fair amount of prestige outside of fighting.
Yeah. Where do you guys see Chet Congo going from here? Mike, give me your thoughts on Congo in the heavyweight division. Now that he's training with Juanito Ibarra, up in Big Bear with Rampage and Bisping or what have you, what do you see his future as being here in the next year or so?
Well, in the heavyweight division, I see Chuck Congo having success against guys that have absolutely no ground game at all. If he goes up against someone like a Carmelo Moreira that can take him down and hold him there, he's going to have issues.
Yeah, problems, yeah.
And against a guy like Randy Couture, he's going to get eaten up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Couture would definitely eat him up. A guy like Gonzaga would beat him too. But I would argue that a guy with as limited a game as Marrero, I don't think at this point, or maybe in his next fight even, when he's developed a little bit further, I don't think would beat him. I think, Congo, we saw it with Asuero Silva. Silva's obviously got a good ground game, although he was quite undersized compared to Congo. But Congo was able to deal with it, and Silva's, incidentally more rounded, well-rounded than Carmelo Marrero.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, too, that Silva's ground game in that fight was absolutely horrible. He tried to go from side mount to mount, by lifting his legs straight up in the air and trying to pass it over, which you're just giving a guy too much space.
Quite true.
It was very poor jiu-jitsu.
Quite true. I think it'll be interesting to see how they match him up, or whether they'll try and, give him time to develop his ground game, or whether they're just going to throw him to, a Gonzaga type for a rebound win. I don't know. I'll be interested to see that.
I think you're going to see him. You just mentioned the guy. I think you'll see him fight next.
Yeah,
it's Gonzaga.
It wouldn't be surprising, honestly, to see, because Gonzaga is going to be a guy that's going to be around for a while. I think we all agree on that.
Because, let's face it, is Congo the sort of guy at this point in his career that's going to renovate his game to be a big-time ground fighter? It's unlikely.
Well, if you ask Mike Goldberg, he is marketable.
Listen, if I asked Mike Goldberg anything of relevance, I wouldn't listen to the answer. He was cool. So, dude asks Joe Rogan, to me, this is one of my gold star moments of the night. Congo is winning round two definitively, just beating on Krokop. And he asks Joe Rogan, so Joe, would this still be an upset if Congo wins? And Rogan clearly has no response, because Rogan, you say what you want about him, but, he's knowledgeable enough that obviously he knows the answer to this cheese puff question. And, it was just a collective gasp on air. I'm sure if you're in the producer's truck, you're thinking to yourself, why do we keep this clown around? I mean,
that question is as if the odds are going to change during the fight.
He went off at plus 340. He's the biggest underdog on the card by, like, twice. There's nobody remotely close to him as far as being an underdog. Yes, it's Netchev if he wins. Krokop is the heaviest favorite at minus 400 on nearly every book. You tool. What a draw. He must have some sort of deal. I can't imagine I haven't replaced him yet.
Oh, man.
I mean, think about it.
He's funny.
He's funny, but we laugh at him because he's a tool. I mean,
yeah.
But,
well, he's also a shill. I mean, we talk about, I think we talk about it every time we do a podcast, is how the announcing, to me, the announcing in MMA right now, the whole situation is a friggin' mess. I mean, you got Mauro Ranallo, who I trash every time I get on the phone, and deservedly so. But, Goldberg was awful tonight. I mean, he was terrible. If you isolate his comments and take everybody else out, you have no idea what was going on. You have no idea what was in the fight.
What is keeping him in the job? There's got to be something that's keeping him in the job. He's awful. I mean, he doesn't even sound knowledgeable. I mean, I'm as new as you get. Technically, I have no... But he doesn't look... I mean, he doesn't look good. I mean, aesthetically. I mean, he's probably a nice guy. Mike Goldberg's probably a real nice guy. But he doesn't look like a broadcaster. He doesn't sound like a broadcaster. He has nothing really to add to the broadcast except, colloquialisms that everybody drinks to. Seriously, I mean, what is keeping this dude in the job? I mean, I like Joe Rogan. I like Joe Rogan because I like Joe Rogan. I tell you this much, and I put this on the forum, not that anybody listened to it, but, Randy Couture, I hope he loses soon so he can go to full-time color commentary. Seriously, Randy Couture is a fantastic color commentator because he's concise, he's knowledgeable. He translates technical terms into layman's terms easily. He makes the fights understandable. He foresees what's going to happen next and gets inside the fighters' minds. I'll tell you, the only reason, certainly one of the reasons is that I want Couture to lose and retire for good is so he can do color commentary when I'm paying $40 or $50 a crack in the pay-per-view to sit across from Joe Rogan.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and I do want to switch gears here just for a minute to talk about this because I think it is relevant. But to the fact that the UFC wants to be taken seriously, and if you've got a guy like this behind the mic who has never called a fight in his life or during his UFC career, never called a fight. Joe Rogan calls the fights. I don't know how you expect to be taken seriously. I don't blame HBO for balking on the deal that wants to bring the UFC to HBO because they want to have their guys doing the commentary. And that's just, I mean, when you've got a history like HBO does of sports broadcasting, you don't want to have these two goons out there doing commentary. I mean, Rogan's fine. I shouldn't say two goons. This goon, along with Rogan, doing commentary.
Yeah, I definitely think if they go to HBO, a good broadcast team would be, say, maybe a compromise where you go with Jim Lampley and Joe Rogan.
Yeah. That would just be entertaining because they would go at it.
If you go from the controversy. I tell you, it's funny. I was watching the preview, the preview they had, UFC Unleashed or what have you, with the Ortiz-Griffin fight, which... I think I'd rather see Ortiz Griffin 2 than Ortiz Evans 2, but I digress. Anyway, Stephen Bonner was doing color / play-by-play for that fight, and he was good. I mean, he was unpolished, but he was good. For the same reasons that Randy Couture is very good, because of the insight. You see it in the NFL every week. There's some guy that looks like a broadcaster and some guy that played the game. Mike Goldberg isn't either one of those guys. What do you mean? No, this is true. This is not funny. This is true.
No, I'm with you. You know who my favorite team is right now? Todd Harris and Frank Mir. I think those two guys are great.
Frank Mir is hilarious. He looks like he's jumped up on Monster Energy drink. Talk about this guy. He looks like he has nothing to say next. It's great. We had a little game where we're trying to predict what he says.
Yeah.
WWE 30 was great that way.
Yeah, they both oversell a little bit, but that aside, I think Frank Mir does great on commentary, and Todd Harris, as opposed to Mike Goldberg, who kind of steps on himself and steps on Rogan, Harris sets him up really nice and lets him give his commentary, and Mir calls a lot of the fight too.
along with doing color like Rogan does. But Harris doesn't like, he's not obtrusive.
Colonel Bob Sheridan and Paul Razzaby aren't bad.
I'm with you on that, actually.
Because the colonel is a goof, but he knows he's a goof, and he plays off of it.
And he can call a fight.
And he puts some excitement into it, and he knows it, and Lazenby is qualified enough, certainly, that I like listening to him call a fight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a shame that the preeminent mainstream organization in MMA right now has the worst broadcast team.
Yeah.
Because of one guy.
Yeah. Well, I would argue. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm still a big fan of the old Pride broadcast team.
Absolutely.
And Stephen Quadra. I mean, those two look great together.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you brought them up because those two were good together. And I thought it was funny. And I know, Mike, you saw the Art of War pay-per-view last week. Did you see that one, Gary?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, you didn't miss much.
No.
But I thought it was funny at the beginning of that show, Ronaldo and Trigg did that one, and how Ronaldo hyped up how the best broadcast team was back together with him and Trigg, and I just kind of had to chuckle at that.
Who said that, Ronaldo or Trigg?
Ronaldo said that.
Okay. But I just watched Trigg, you know, do the soliloquy at UFC, Pride 34, next I was watching before the fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I like Frank Trigg, I'm sorry. I do too.
He's a little full of himself sometimes, but you know, you don't want that to be a commentary.
But he's emotional, and that's good.
Yeah, I mean, all fighters are full of themselves to a certain extent. You know, you go in there and fight people, but anyway.
The goal there is such a tool. Is this like, would this be an upset if Congo wins? No, you don't. What do you think? I wanted Rogan to give him one of the, you know, L.A. improv retorts right there and on Spike TV in front of, you know, 3, 4, 5 million people on Spike TV and say, no, it really wouldn't be. You know, we're all thinking Congo would win. Because the guy who's probably the #3 heavyweight in the world.
My favorite segue by Goldberg in the night was when Rogan said that Congo's ground game had markedly improved, and Goldberg says something to the effect of, speaking of markedly, Congo is a marketable kind of guy, and I was, you could just hear the groans worldwide. I was like, oh my gosh,
that was awful. That was just terrible. I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, he's awful. I don't know what to pay him. I would do his job twice as well for half the money. Seriously.
Oh.
Hey, man, I'll come out, make it entertaining. You don't even got to pay me. I'll just call from Joe Rogan, get out of the way for Joe to, you know, and Randy Couture, and I'll just interject better than he will and look better than he does. He's awful. I'll pay Jarvis to go out there and do it. Because Jarvis has the technical knowledge and the wisdom.
Yeah.
Right, Jarvis?
Yeah, definitely. The one thing I want to point out with play-by-play guys, I think that a good play-by-play guy can be interchangeable between sports. Sort of like
absolutely.
In Al Michaels.
Yeah, Al Michaels, Marv Albert, you know. Those
Ron
McKecker.
Marv Albert, Bob Costas.
Harry Callis. I love Harry Callis. I'm a silly guy, though.
Mm-hmm. But in the final days of Pride, I don't know, for some reason, I always thought when I was going to get a pay-per-view after Mara left that for some reason I was going to turn it on and Joe Buck was going to be there doing play-by-play. I always had this fear of that.
Oh, man.
You're right. They should be interchangeable. You're right.
Yeah.
And like I say, you go back to the ultimate 3 o'clock in the morning guy, Ron McKecker. Eddie Rivetard is it? He's done every apparent of the obscure mixed martial arts event since like 1987. An ESPN Classic. And he's there.
It is true. So, yeah, okay, well, good.
Not that way with color commentators, though. I don't want to see Don Cherry doing color commentary on a UFC pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, you have to reach ours. Like I said, Randy Couture, for my money right now, is the #1 guy in terms of color commentary.
That's very good.
I think I have Boss Root and Randy Couture team, you know, sort of like a straight guy and a comedy figure would be great.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
That could definitely work. That'd be great.
Fantastic. Boss Root and Randy Couture.
They couldn't call a fight on the radio because you wouldn't know what was going on, but it'd be funny to watch on TV.
Shane Couture is going to be the heavyweight champion until he's 50.
I'll tell you what, I don't know how many people will be surprised if that was the case.
Well, who's going to beat him? Like you said, you had a man crush on him on your heavyweight lay of the land. Plug him. Plug the forum. Who's going to beat him? Top the beat.
All right, well, let's, I guess now that we've addressed the commentary, that's good. Let's move on to the probably the most controversial fight of the night, Mike Bisping and Matt Hamill. Jerry, I'm going to start off with Jerry on this one. Give me your thoughts. I know you have thoughts, so let's hear them.
Boy, do I have thoughts. I'm going to start just by saying I was a Mike Bisping fan before this fight. I liked his game. I thought he was very entertaining on The Ultimate Fighter. I'm a New York guy. I kind of root for Matt because it's hard not to root for Matt Hamill, you know, understandably. And he comes off a certain way. And I thought this was a good matchup and a good fight. And actually, the fight itself, I was very impressed with Matt Hamill. And I was surprised at how much he was willing to stand up with Bisping. Shocked. And I was surprised at how well he did it. I thought Hamill's game has improved dramatically since he took out Rex Holman back in UFC 68. I was very surprised. I was surprised that Bisping gave Hamill as much respect as he did in terms of not leading in with kicks and engaging more frequently and counterpunching and circling and staying on the periphery of the cage. I thought that Hamill won round one and two, and Bisping probably won round three. That was the way I scored it. And I kind of gave, you know, clearly round one was Hamill, and I thought pretty clearly round three was Bisping. Round two, I gave to Hamill by virtue of keeping Bisping on the periphery. He scored a couple takedowns, and he exhibited that vagary that we call, quote, cage control, end quote. And that's why I had 29-28 for Hamill. I thought the decision... And I hate it when it goes to a decision and the judges' scorecards are all over the place. I didn't see it 30-27 for Hamill. Somebody did. Then somebody had 29-20, you know, two judges had 29-28 Bisping, but I thought that was a sham of a decision. What really pissed me off was Bisping acting like, yeah, I won the fight. And, you know, I mean, damage-wise, he was pretty marked up.
Yeah.
And in his heart, and I heard a few boos from the crowd when the decision was announced. Now, I don't know if those were American fans in London. I don't know if those were people that were saying, sham decision. And certainly it's debatable. And, I mean, I've seen a fair number of fights this year. There's not, and I think we talked about this before the show, me and Jars. It's not the worst decision I've seen, but it's up there. Because I thought Hamill won the fight. And I was surprised at this thing was not as aggressive as we've seen him in other fights. I thought he gave Hamill too much respect and didn't fight his fight. And I thought that's really what caused him to lose the fight on my card, at least. I think that Hamill's game, talking about the theme you talked about with Marcus Davis, Hamill's game has dramatically improved since we saw him last against Rex Holman, and even more so since we saw him in The Ultimate Fighter. And I think that, you know, he certainly has more room to improve. But, man, he has gotten a lot better. Plus, he looked big. And he was very confident on his feet. I was kind of torqued about the decision. I was very torqued about Bisping, who, after the fight, like I said, he shot to the top of my fighters I want to get, you know, knocked out quickly, immediately. Just because, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, what do I know? Hamill won that fight. Because he dictated the pace and exhibited cage control, scored some takedowns, and kind of determined where the fight was and landed more blows. That's what I, you know, that, again, that's just me. But I thought Hamill was very disrespectful after the fight. I thought Hamill showed some class, actually, you know, acknowledging the decision, you know, doing the best he can, you know, speaking to the crowd. And that, you know, probably showed some class, and Bisping didn't, and I'm ready for Bisping to start fighting in the United States and, you know, have a decision go against him, you know, kind of this way. Because I was very disappointed in Bisping after the fight.
Mike, what do you say?
Well, the first round of the fight, I definitely saw that round for Hamill. Okay, the second round on a first viewing, I saw it for Hamill. Yeah, I thought with him scoring the takedown in the round, even though he wasn't able to do much with it, that still got him the round. In the third round, I had for Bisping. I'm going to go back and watch the fight again tomorrow and see if, you know, I see what the judges saw. Okay, I definitely don't see the 30-27 score for Hamill.
Yeah.
Okay, but it was a close fight, and it's one of those things that could have gone either way, and it's more likely to go that way when you have a foreign fighter in his home country.
Yep.
It's just one of the things that I've noticed. It's strange about boxing, about mixed martial arts, anything that's judged is Americans are sort of, they have to be in their hometown to get that decision. Okay, the foreigners just have to be in their home country. And especially when you have American judges. And it's a weird thing. I think it may be because as a country, Americans aren't as nationalistic as, say, the Brits.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit on it, Mike, I got a volume problem there. Anyway, I think, Mike, you hit on it, that it's really, I mean, this is a bad indicator, to me. You know, with all the scandal going on with the NBA refs, you know, possibly involved in gambling and all that kind of mess, the last thing you want to have is any kind of question on judges' motivation. You know, you don't want to have, judges being swayed by the home crowd. I mean, that's the biggest problem in any sport. You know, you get these umpires behind the plate in baseball games, and the crowd gets going, and they're, you know, on their feet for the pitcher, and the strike zone suddenly gets bigger. You know, it's apples and oranges, because judges have 5 minutes to gauge who won a round. You know, it's not a snap decision that they're making. So they should be able to really separate themselves from the crowd. And if they can't do that, I mean, first of all, and Jerry, you hit on this, how did one guy score 30-27 Hamill and two guys score 29-28 Bisping? How does that even happen? You know?
That's the problem with judging. And Sean, you hit it on the head. Round ends. Like Mike, you said, you're going to go back and watch it again and try to see what the judges saw. You shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
The round ends, you look at your scorecard, you got a couple minutes to put in your scores, and it's your impression of what you've just seen for the last 5 minutes. I'm sorry. The second round was Hamill. He dictated the pace. This thing was on the periphery. He didn't hurt Hamill. Hamill scored the takedowns. Hamill won the round. If it was Matt Hughes won that fight 29-28.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right, and I think that's the problem.
Decision. And I look at it, Sean, as, you know, here, and this is where everything else comes into athletics. It was, you know, they booed him when he came out because he was American. Well, all you know, English, bleep, 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 we're on the same side, you know? You know, it was crap. You know, I would like to see this thing track his, but when New York finally ratifies and legalizes MMA, I would like to see Michael Bisping track his butt over into Utica, which is just down the road from where I live, and fight at the 20,000-seat Pepsi Arena, and drag his butt in there and fight Matt Hamill there in his hometown. And if he fights like that, he'll be 30-27 on every card.
Yeah.
You know, but the play, like Mike said, hometown, home country, it was a lousy decision, I think. Because
yeah.
You can't go back and watch it again. You can't. It was your impression, and your impression, I'm sorry, the last 2 minutes of that round was Hamill winning the round.
Yeah. And that's
why you see boxers who have a flurry in the last, you know, 30 seconds to a minute to try to sway the judges. It's the same thing in MMA right now with their reaction to MMA, but certainly the UFC, where you have this 10-point must system. You got to win the last minute of the. You got to win the last minute of the round. If you win the last minute of the round, you'll probably steal the round.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something else there with the 10-point must, but I was going to get to that. I think we've mentioned it before, but the 10-point must is a sham system for MMA. You can't, I mean, it's such a horrible way to score a multidimensional fight. You know, to me, and this is the top of my head, you have different judges scoring different things. You get one judge that scores, you know, grappling, one judge that scores striking, one that scores aggression, I don't know. What's the, you know, you got all these ways, or all these criteria that they list on how you win rounds, and yet it comes down to, oh, this guy won and this guy didn't. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, how is that supposed to work? I mean, it doesn't, obviously, because when you get guys that see a fight that differently, you need to change the criteria that they're looking at.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Or at least specify better.
I agree with you, Sean. I think. I like I said, I thought, you know, as much as I'm going to criticize the two judges that called the 29-28 Bisping, you still have to criticize the person that called the 30-27 Hamill, because it wasn't 30-27 Hamill.
No, that last round was clearly Bisping. Clearly
Bisping won the third round. There's any question about that. Hamill won the first round, and most, and I should say, some folks, think you win the second round, too.
Yeah.
But it wasn't 30-27 Hamill.
No. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think the 29-28 Bisping scores are a little more realistic than the 30-27 Hamill scores.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any final thoughts on this one? Yeah, go ahead.
I'll pass. Go ahead, Josh.
Okay, the one thing that always bugs me, and maybe this is just because I'm evil whenever Matt Hamill fights, okay, he came out to Born in the USA tonight. Okay, if you were the person that chose Matt Hamill's walk-in music, what would you pick as a prank? I'm thinking Barbie World.
Say that again. I didn't hear you clearly, Trent. I'm sorry.
Okay. If you were going to play a prank on Matt Hamill and pick his walk-in music, what would you choose?
By the way, I probably wouldn't, because he'd probably kick my butt. I could. There's hundreds of songs you could choose.
You know,
it was. I tell you, it was funny, Jars. It was funny because I was watching this fight with my wife, who's only the fight wife, and she was rolling about the songs these guys came into. I mean, when Bisping came into London Calling, she started laughing, tears coming out of her eyes, thinking, The Clash isn't manly at all. Why would you come to The Clash? You know? And she thought it was hilarious. I mean, you know, she enjoyed the fights, but I know she was, I couldn't stop her laughing to watch the fights with the entrance music. Because when Hamill came out to Springsteen, I'm guessing he picked that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was very entertaining myself.
I mean, if you want to play the heel, to me, either you're good at playing the heel or you're not. To me, Hamill is not a good heel. Josh Koscheck is a good heel.
Yeah, he's a natural.
Okay? Josh Koscheck is a natural heel. Matt Hamill is too sympathetic to be a heel. Because you can't hate him because he's got a, and I'm going to use the word disability, he's got a disability. You can't tease a guy because he's deaf. You can't hate him because he's deaf. You know, so he can't be a, he really can't be a heel. Even though, I mean, you got to put him in a foreign country for him to be a heel. So he really can't be a...
I guess the point that's not about Hamill. He's about probably the most unlikable deaf person I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that. He wasn't very likable. I mean, you know, didn't come across as very likable in the... On the Ultimate Fighter, and I thought it was funny when Goldberg, you know, mentioned that. He says, if you, I can't even remember exactly how he put it, but it's like, if you can't love Matt Hamill for all the stuff he's been through or whatever, then you're not a human being. I was like, come on now.
Goldberg foul. Okay, look at Goldberg foul.
You know?
Goldberg foul. You know, I've had the opportunity to see Matt Hamill personally, and he's a nice guy. He's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you watch these reality shows, you have to remember there's editing. And I'm sure he
came off.
And he came off like, you know, he's really not a bad guy.
Yeah. And that happens. My point was you can respect the guy for what he's gone through or whatever. But you don't have to like him. You know, you can be a human being and still not like the guy.
But Sean, you can't make him a heel. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
The blind ain't got no leg or some damn thing. You can't make him a heel. You just can't.
I agree.
They gotta be. Josh Koscheck is a great heel. If I was Josh Koscheck, I wouldn't stop the gimmick he got going for the rest of his career.
Josh Koscheck,
if Tim Sylvia had any PR experience at all, Tim Sylvia would do the same thing.
Oh, you're right.
Because people don't like Tim at all. Perhaps unfairly, but nobody wants to, you know, Tim Sylvia should work the Josh Koscheck routine until he retires.
Yeah.
And it would make him tremendously hot commodity.
Yeah.
But you can't hate Matt Hamill. You can't make him a heel because he's deaf. And then you look like a dink, especially in that culture.
Yeah, very true.
Hey, Jerry, I hate to break it to you, but Josh Koscheck, that's not a gimmick.
Is that what? I said what?
That's not a gimmick with Koscheck.
Even so, but it works. But Charles, it works. It works. It's great. I want to see Josh. I want to see Koscheck fight over and over and over for years.
Yeah.
Because it may not be a gimmick. It's not the point.
Yeah, it helps that it's not one, probably.
If Josh Koscheck only had one arm, I couldn't hate Josh Koscheck. You know what I mean? It's like that kid, the point is, it may not be a gimmick for Koscheck, but still, it works for him, and he's going to make oodles of money at it over the next 10 years. He's not going away.
Yeah.
Plus, he's good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Anyway, all that aside, any final thoughts on this one, Mike?
No.
All right. Let's move on to the main event. I thought it was a great fight. We had UFC light heavyweight champion Rampage Jackson taking on Pride heavyweight, light heavyweight and middleweight champion Dan Henderson. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this one first, and then Jerry, you can just jump right in.
Well, the way I saw this fight was Henderson came out very strong. He looked very good in the first two rounds. He was able to take Jackson down. He was able to pretty much dominate on the feet, too. And when the third round started, it started turning in Jackson's favor. And the third round, I had scored for Jackson, and it was a close round, though. But then the fourth and fifth round were pretty much all Jackson. And he ends up taking a unanimous decision victory, and it was a great fight.
Yeah,
I probably enjoyed this one most tonight because, you know, it was just like a long drawn out comeback by Quentin Jackson, and he really proved that, hey, his knockout of Chuck Liddell wasn't a fluke, and the old Quentin Jackson that, you know, that everyone thought was gone after the Silva losses and the Shogun losses, back.
Yeah. Jerry?
Charles, God bless you, because I was watching this fight, and I was watching this fight, and I was doing myself somewhere in the eastern United States, Mike Jarslick is loving this fight. I was.
You were probably thinking at the point where Henderson picked that nice sweep from half guard with Kimura.
I did. Yes. I entered onto the my solitary UFC 75 thread right at that point that I mentioned you. I almost hate to say it. I enjoyed this fight. I really did. I mean, it was five rounds of guys gutting it out against each other. I kind of saw it like Jarvis did, certainly. I'm not sure I believe in the old Quentin Jackson theory as much as some others. I think that he's a guy that's entering his, you know, I think, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's only 28, right?
29, yeah.
28, 29. He's coming into it. I mean, this is his time. You know, we talked about this when he beat Chuck. He's coming into it. This is where he's going to sow his oats in the fighting world, as they say. And I'm not sure we're seeing the old Quentin Jackson as much as a new Quentin Jackson that can go five rounds with a guy that is, and Josh, you can correct me if I'm wrong, probably a technically superior opponent in terms of grappling.
As far as wrestling, Dan Henderson is a much better wrestler than Quentin Jackson.
Right. But I thought that Jackson held his own. I thought clearly he won the last two rounds. I agree with you that I thought the turning point was in the third round. I was really impressed with Jackson to be able to gut it out, maintain, because you could see how much it meant to him that he is still UFC champion. And I thought his interview after the fight was gold. if that's not on ESPN several times over the next couple of days, I'll be severely disappointed. It was very good for the time. You could see Henderson was disappointed. You could see these are two guys that really respected each other. I thought there was a good decision that clearly Jackson won the fight. But I was very impressed with Jackson's resilience, his stamina, his ability to fend off Henderson, who I thought fought a great fight. And I would like to see Henderson serve next for another quote-unquote unification. I mean, that's what I would like to see next. I think it would give Silva all sorts of trouble. But I thought this was a nice cap to a real good free card. And I think Jackson's going to be tough to beat for some time to come, Shogun Rua or no Shogun Rua. I think Jackson's going to be tough to beat. His game is, he's got a real nice, real well-rounded game right now, and he's got the stamina, the endurance. The championship means something to him. He's in the spotlight. He knows he's in the spotlight. He loves the spotlight. He knows he's going to make some money off the spotlight, and you can tell that his motivation is clear. I think Quentin Jackson's going to be a champion for some time to come.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I thought this was the fight of the night. I really enjoyed the fight. This was a championship fight. I mean, this is what you want to see in a championship fight. Henderson comes out and he makes a real strong case for himself in the first round. I had Jackson winning every round after that, although the second and third were really close, as Jarslik said. I just really, really enjoyed this fight. It's the kind of fight where you're on the edge of your seat the whole time because you never know what's going to happen, When they were on the feet, when they were on the feet, either one of them could have caught each other and they'd have gone down, they even caught each other flush a couple of times, not a whole lot, but enough to where, they were both wobbled a few times, and it was just a lot of fun to watch.
You never got the sense Henderson was out of the fight.
No, you didn't.
You never really had the sense that Jackson was winning it definitively either.
Yeah. Even though Henderson was obviously more gassed than Rampage was,
37 years
never.
Old?
Yeah, exactly.
He was 37.
Yeah, so it's I just thought that was a great fight, and I want to point something out real quick while I'm thinking about it as well, because I've got the fights on here as we're talking, non-fight related. After the Bisping-Hamill fight, they put the camera on Brandon Vera and Jorge St. Pierre sitting out there together.
They did.
And then did you guys notice that Vera pulled in Roger Huerta from the side?
Yes.
Roger Huerta was wearing a sweater vest?
Yes.
I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was great.
The record, oh my God, is that like, his son or something? I didn't know. He's one of the best lightweights in the world right now. I said he's a tough student.
Roger Huerta in a sweater vest. I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, that was best. High comedy. High comedy. High comedy.
Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, the fight, the fight was just fantastic. Great way to end the night. Just good stuff. I don't know what else to say about it, really. And now we have our first undisputed champion. Good stuff.
Well, here's the question. Where do you see Henderson going?
Henderson, I'm with you. I'd love to see him go down to middleweight and fight Anderson Silva. I don't know if that'll happen because I know Henderson wants to stay at 205. But that would just be it'd be a great fight. Henderson's a little bit outside of the 205, and he's real good at middleweight. So I don't know. I'd be intrigued to see him go down.
Oh, I think he would give. I think we talked the last time about Silva kind of. you know, his rematch against Franklin, I'm not sure either of us, and Jared, I don't know what you think, but I'm not sure either of us think that Franklin's got a shot at beating Silva again, or at all. But I think Henderson could. I think Henderson's got a great shot at Silva.
Yeah, the thing that Henderson would have there is, you know, Silva's great in the clinch, but so is Henderson, and Henderson's got that Greco, you know.
I'd like to see that fight. I would like to see that fight.
I would too.
Next.
Staying in 205, who gets the next title shot? Mike, what do you think? Who gets the shot at Rampage next?
I would say that the winner of the Shogun Forrest Griffin match is going to get the next shot at Rampage.
Oh, don't say that, Jars.
What do you think, Jerry?
I would think that, I don't know, it's been a weird year. What if Griffin upsets Rua? I mean, I understand. He's a long underdog. I understand that. But what if Griffin wins? You have a Griffin Rampage ahead of Jardine, ahead of Liddell, ahead of Rua. Oh. I think if Rua wins, I think Rua's next, absolutely. But I think Rua's going to win, obviously.
And now what happens if Jardine beats Liddell and Griffin beats Rua? What then? Because you got Jardine who beat Griffin. And then we have
the welterweight division.
Yeah.
Well, then it turns into a match. The other possibility is the winner of the Tito Ortiz Rashad Evans rematch.
Yeah. Could be.
I don't see either of them. I don't see either Tito or Rashad giving Quentin a good fight.
I don't either, but at the same time, the picture would be so muddled if Liddell beats, or if Jardine beats Liddell and Griffin beats Tua, that you almost, I mean, that almost turns into a number one contender fight.
I think we agree if Rua wins, you know, Shogun's next up.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any dispute about that. I think Ortiz Evans is almost a teaser just to move somebody up the ladder. Jardine Liddell, I'm not sure. I mean, that's a funny tune-up fight for Liddell to get back into the title fight. I think it's a bad matchup for Liddell.
I see.
It's not a bad matchup. There are better matchups for Liddell than Keith Jardine in terms of getting him back to the title picture.
Yeah.
I'm sure they want Liddell Jackson 3.
Oh, sure they do, but they want. I think they want Liddell Silva more than that.
It's funny. I think we forgot Silva. So yes, we forgot Silva.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Why not Wanderlei?
Yeah, I think that probably turns into your number one contender fight. You know, I think it depends, really. Everything depends on everything. I think Julio probably should get the first shot if he beats Griffin, and then you've probably got another. What's that?
It's the new welterweight division.
It is.
And it's great. Three fights. There's a number one contender coming out of them somewhere.
Yeah. You can't forget about you've got up and coming guys like Thiago Silva. I think Thiago Silva is going to be a monster. I'm looking forward to seeing his fight with Derval. I think that's going to be great stuff.
But, Mike Bisping is a contender.
Mike Bisping, maybe in the middleweight division.
I wish that was the middleweight division. Yeah, I think top middleweight, I think, can beat him alive.
Middleweight's a little thin. Maybe it's pretty thin.
Let's say Dan Henderson drops down to 185. Dan Henderson and Mike Bisping? Eek.
Yeah, Henderson would probably beat him pretty bad. Let's look at real quick. Well, actually, let me say this. And you knew I was going to get this shot at if you read my blog. But
it was a good blog. It was a good blog. I agreed with you and Keller. Fairies about who he's coming from. I digress.
Yeah. As far as the pacing goes on this event, and I know Jerry's going to yell at me about it being free, and I know it's free, and I appreciate it being free, and that's great, but that first hour, I mean, I don't know how many viewers they lost in between the first two fights. You had two fights that went a total of about 6 minutes, if that, in the first hour of this show, and it's scheduled to run 3.5 hours. You know, what's a casual fan think that they're turning in for their first or second UFC event, and that what if their first event is UFC 70, which was also horribly paced, and they turn into this one?
I got the answer for you. And Sean, the casual fan is going to keep checking back to see if it's the next fight time. They're going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the problem.
But at the same time, you don't want to watch the fluff. I'll channel surf him between that and the Yankees game because I knew there was going to be 20 minutes of fluff.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, but if you have content, it's different. But they didn't have, you know, and they made no bones about it that it wasn't going to be content. So coming up next, and we knew there'd be, and anybody who's savvy is going to say, well, it's going to be another 5-10 minutes at least. Plus, they have a lengthy intro, so if you catch, you come back and they're doing the interview, you hang with it because the fight's coming up. Yeah,
but then
between that and the Yankees game.
Yeah, but then you leave it off for 5 minutes more, longer than you should have, and you miss Marcus Davis and Paul Taylor. You know,
yeah, but
then
you know, not nowadays. Who watches the same thing for 3 hours straight? If I pay $50 for it, I'm not changing the channel. It's free. I'm changing the channel. I just watched the fight. I listened to Mike Goldberg tell me nothing. You know, I'm going to watch the replay a little bit, and I'm going back to the Yankees game. And I'll come back in about 15 minutes, because I know Dustin Chapman in the next 15 minutes.
I just still think they're shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, the flow of an MMA event, I mean, you can ride the adrenaline that you're getting from this first fight into the next one. And by the end of the show, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how fast that 3 hours went by. You know, instead of, when is the next fight coming?
Yeah, but I didn't think the first 45 minutes was that bad. I think it was that bad. It wasn't great. But then where I got nervous was it was like 11 p.m. Eastern, and they hadn't started the main event yet. And the Bisping-Hamill fight had just gotten over. And it was like 11:03. I'm thinking there's one more fight to go, and they got an hour of air time.
Yeah.
So I know this fight probably hasn't started for 20 minutes.
Well, that's the other problem.
That was going to have no commercials at all, so, you know.
Yeah.
I knew that there was only going to be the one-minute break in between rounds, and we weren't going to be subjected to watch about 3 minutes of bad movie trailers.
I'm sick of movie trailers. But it was free. But it was free, yeah.
It was free, and, you know, that's great. But and my other problem is they didn't fill the whole airtime. I mean, you got 3.5 hours. There were three more fights, two of them that were a round and another one that was two rounds.
Old complaint, Sean. Old complaint.
I know.
Never fill the time, Sean.
I know.
Never fill the time.
However, you have less of an excuse to fill your time, to not fill your time, when you've got a pre-recorded event on a network channel rather than pay-per-view. I mean, they've got actual slots on networks, you know. If you've got 3.5 hours on Spike TV, that's different than setting aside 3.5 hours on a DirecTV pay-per-view.
Sean, when they go to sign the advisory board, we'll change that.
Yeah, well, regardless, I will complain. I will keep complaining. Damn it.
You should.
I tell
you.
You're right.
So, otherwise, you got to drop your $2 or $3 to watch the fights that were on the other card, and all of a sudden, it's not a free card.
Yeah.
You know, it's principle. It's principle. Yeah. Now, granted, you know, if you're a hardcore fan, you're going to do it. But I think the Spike show isn't set towards the hardcore fan necessarily. It's out there.
No, you're right.
It's out there. So
you're right. But one of the problems is it doesn't. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
So like I said, nobody. I'm not sure. I should say nobody. I think many people channel surf over the course of half an hour. You know what I mean? I mean, I wanted to watch the fight. I watched the fight. I watched the prelim. I watched the hype. I watched the fight. I watched the replay. I watched Joe Rogan in the ring asking generic questions with the Mickey's replay. And then I changed the channel.
But is it better to do that, or is it better to have an event where you're saying, I can't change the channel?
But I know, but, okay, part of it is I'm jaded. I've watched enough of these. Again, in 3 weeks or whatever, or 2 weeks, when I order the next pay-per-view, and I've lost $50 on it, the channel isn't changing. And I have to do another lousy movie preview, because Good Luck Chocolate's awful. And sorry, I've seen that movie before. I'm not, you know, not dropping me and the wife the popcorn and candy babysitter. It's about $70. Ain't going to watch that movie. Sorry, ain't doing it. You know, so don't waste your deals. I don't need to see a clip. The point is, free show, I'll flip around. Because that's the remote control generation. And I'm paying for it. I'm throwing the remote out the window.
You always have to shoot down my complaints, don't you?
It's not shooting down your complaint. You're right, Sean. I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. The problem is, and that's probably the difference is that, like, did you watch the show from buzzer to buzzer tonight?
Well, of course not.
Wow, you blocked. You blocked on the main site, aren't you?
I don't watch DVR.
At least I was honest about it. I told you I changed channels. But, I mean, seriously, so you didn't either. So you're supporting my argument.
That well, I did in the sense that I flipped back to it and fast-forwarded through stuff because of the DVR, because I love the DVR.
I thought the first two fights were good because they were bang-bang, exciting, hard-hitting, lots of action fights. It didn't last long, and they made you miss the action. And I thought that was more of a hook to make you watch the show by virtue of the first two, not even the first fight, but the first two fights were, geez, how did I miss this? If you didn't see it live and you had to watch it on the replay, that wasn't good at all. You missed it, so then you were hooked into the rest of the show.
Yeah,
I thought this was one of the better three shows, even though the pacing, I agree with you, was poor. But when you have a show like this, I don't say it doesn't matter, but the people that are running the show, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I think we're saying the same thing, pretty much.
We are. We truly are. Because you didn't watch the show Buzzer to Buzzer either.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, if it was a pay-per-view, Sean, I bet you would have.
Well, sure.
All right, there you go. So,
maybe.
Not maybe, you would have. You would have. Because I know the manifest you have on Fedor. You were waiting for Fedor to come out with David Plant, weren't you?
I was hoping.
Yeah, I think most, and Jars, what about you?
I was hoping, but I kind of knew it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, but you never know, because you can't trust Dana White that way.
No.
You never know. But so for hardcore MMA fans, and you know, I think we're broadcasting to them and podcasting to them, I think that you might have hung on looking for that inter-fight interlude, you might say.
Yeah.
And we never get anything interesting in between the fights on a UFC show, even the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I go.
Their production is it's very static. They have their gladiator video at the beginning. They have Mike Goldberg running down, just saying random things at the end, like tonight he told the ring girls we'll see them in Sacramento or something. And
But here's the thing again, though. We watch these broadcasts for, I mean, in my case, at least 2 years. You guys probably longer. You know what you're getting. If you're a casual fan.
But it doesn't mean it could be better.
Oh, Sean, there is no question. It should be better.
Yeah.
It should be. It should be better. Not only the free shows, but the pay-per-view shows, too. Like, when I watch the pay-per-view show, I don't need to see the promo for the show. I've already seen it, and I watched the show already.
Yeah.
So, yes, it should be better. It should be. And they've done this long enough, and they've been in the mainstream long enough at this point, that it should be better. The Pacing on Tonight show should have been better. Period. It was a free show. You're giving the fights away anyway. Put as many fights out there as you can, because you're giving them away. You're giving away the unification bout. I mean, seriously, is Tebow Etem... You can't put that fight out there. It was a three-round fight. You couldn't put that out there instead of Good Luck Chuck.
Yeah.
You've been pimping the movie the whole time. Listen, if you know in 2 minutes if you're going to see that movie or not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, not to harp on it again. I mean, I know we've beaten it to death, but one of the problems I have is that the WEC does such a good job with their pacing and their production. I just don't understand how they do better than the UFC, you know. But maybe it's because they're on a smaller network and they can afford to not have as many commercials. I don't know. But anyway, we'll get off of that right now.
Because I think that's a good, but Sean, you make a good point. The WEC show was wonderfully paced.
Oh yes, fantastic.
That's your interest. You didn't change the channel.
No. That's my point.
And the fights were good.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, they were good fights.
And it was live. The event was live. And you couldn't tell which fights were prelims.
Right. And I think to myself, you know, you have a taped show. If you have a taped show, you should be able to construct a show that looks live.
This is my point.
And you're right. I don't understand why it's different.
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. I don't understand why it's different. I would accept the same consistency. You know, that shirt's nice. I would accept WBC to have the same kind of herky-jerky stuff as UFC does. I digress.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, I promise, but the, not to mention that UFC 74, the pace was fantastic. They did it really, really well.
Yeah.
On pay-per-view. So.
Pay-per-view.
But whatever. What do you
it should
do?
Be. It, but, yeah, it should be. It should be good. It's a pay-per-view event. You know, I'll say this about the old, you know, when I used to buy wrestling pay-per-views, the pacing was great because you paid for it.
Yeah.
And it's like they knew you paid for it, and therefore they had to be better. If I'm dropping $50 for a show, I want to see as many fights as you can cram into that 3 hours or 3.5 hours, and I don't need any fluff.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to see the the promos for the fights I already bought.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't need to see Rua Griffin promos.
Yeah.
Again.
I'm buying that one too.
You know what I mean? I've seen it.
Yeah.
I'm getting it. I'm in. You know, when I put my credit card number in, leave me alone and just show me the fights.
Well, the one thing I noticed about WEC this past Wednesday was they weren't perfect with their pacing either.
And no, they weren't.
No, you're right.
They put the Blasavina-Joe Benoit fight on. And, I know it was a short fight, but can't you find something better to do with your time? I mean, you have a Marcus Hicks fight that was on the undercard, and Marcus Hicks is he's an undefeated lightweight contender.
Yeah, see, I want to see that fight. I thought he was going to wait.
Yeah, they just completely skipped his fight, even though it only lasted about 2 minutes.
Yeah. But I would imagine, in their case, I can give them a pass because they're probably looking for stuff to put on their, on the WEC record show.
Yeah.
They should have a pretty big tape library. I mean, they're throwing shows right now.
Yeah. But, you know, as we know, nothing before Zuffa really counts.
True. I mean, but come on. You couldn't show Kara Parisian against Shoni Carter?
This is what I'm saying. Yeah, that would be good stuff.
Right.
But,
He's trying to hope things will improve as they get more mainstream. But at the same time, you almost know in your heart that it won't.
Yeah. I would like to see what a network could do with it if the network was in charge of a production instead of the company, and in charge of the commentary and all that stuff. I would like to see that.
There would be vast improvements.
Yeah,
I think there would too. I think there would too. You just
gotta give it to NBC. Give it to NBC Sports, who does they do sports cast every day, and see what they do with it.
Okay.
But
I'm not sure you're going to get there. I just don't think you're going
to get there. American Gladiators.
Well, yeah, there'd be no more Gladiator at the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
I hate that guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey,
I make fun of him every time.
Did you ever start out the Clay Guida conspiracy?
The Clay Guida conspiracy.
How he's fighting all the tough guys and not getting any decisions.
See that he's
going to win the last fight out.
Yeah.
I think I figured it out. I think I figured the judging out. Well, and maybe this is me, just it's been a long night of MMA, and here we are, out deep in the podcast and all. But Clay Guida clearly is an entertaining fighter. I think most people would agree with that, and he has tremendous upside, and who would want to watch him fight, no doubt. But I think you were judging the fight. First, Clay Guida comes in with a fair amount of hair, certainly, all right? And stay with me here, stay with me, because I'm coming to it. So, and he moves a lot, and you'll see guys throw jabs and shots at glance, but it's, he has so much hair, it looks like an impact shot, and I think that's where he loses points. You're laughing.
You may be onto something there.
I can't explain it.
I believe I can disprove this theory. If you watch the second, Strike Force show, Clay Guida against Gilbert Melendez,
both with the hair.
Yeah, that's Gilbert Melendez, though.
Guida was dominated throughout the whole fight, but it ended up being a split decision. He was up on one of the judges' scorecards. I don't know
how
he fights.
Okay, but again, I'm trying to keep apples with apples here. In the UFC, I mean, it's a good point, Josh. You're right. Gilbert Melendez, I mean, you know, no, you can't question his pedigree. In the UFC, Guida just does not seem to get the calls. I've been struggling to figure this out for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Why this guy has a hard time getting a decision.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not a topic, but I thought I'd throw it in there.
Yeah. So good. I think we broke down the event pretty well. Any parting comments from Jerry?
Considering everything we've said tonight, I really enjoyed the card. I really did. I thought it was a great card. Especially for free TV. And like I said, I think free TV gives you the liberty to kind of bounce around, especially if you've seen one of these cards already and you know you have an idea of what the pacing is going to be anyway, and you wait for them to surprise you by doing it better. I thought it was a great free card. I thought there were some great fights. It was highlighted. You know, you got off with two great fights to start the card. You had a controversial decision that I couldn't stand. And you had a great championship fight that really showed the caliber of two great fighters. I don't think Henderson lost anything in that fight. In fact, if he makes a drop to middleweight, I think he's going to be devastating down there. Jackson has shown he's coming to his own. Overall, I thought it was a great night for the UFC. I look forward to it kicking us into the fall with a number of great events, you know, after what was pretty much a blasé summer. I was a little disappointed we didn't see a little more Dana White making a big announcement. But that, if that's the worst thing I can say, it was a great night.
All right. Mike.
And Mike Goldberg is a tool.
That's also true.
Well, I thought the show was great. We had a tremendous main event tonight that lived up to expectations and then some. We went to full five rounds and wasn't boring at all. We also had there was a little bit of everything. You had a nice knockout with the Houston Alexander fight. You had a very cool submission with Marcus Davis submitting Paul Taylor. You had the big upset and with the Krokop loss and the controversial decision with Bing and Hamill. So there was something for everyone on this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with both of you. There was a great card. I'm glad it was free. I think they could have done better with the production, but we've already, you know, gone over that. Really good night for the UFC overall. Rampage is going to be a star. It's just a matter of him getting the right kind of exposure. Like Jerry said, the post-fight interview was gold. He's the best guy for post-fight interviews I think I've ever seen. really, really, really good card. And we'll be back this week with another podcast. We will review the UFC Fight Night card coming up this Wednesday with Kenny Florian and Dean Thomas headlining the card. We've also got Chris Leben and Terry Martin, which should last about 2 seconds. But it should be an entertaining 2 seconds. You got Dustin Haslett and Jonathan Goulet, which hopefully Goulet doesn't get punched because he will get knocked out if he does. Junior Sun Sal and Nate Diaz. Should be an interesting fight. Yeah, Thiago Alves makes his return from steroid suspension against Kuniyoshi Hironaka. Should also be interesting. Leonard Garcia and Cole Miller, which I'm surprised they're giving Miller Garcia already. I would have thought they'd build him up with a few more easier fights. Because he's not going to be able to hurt Garcia.
No.
You've got Luke Cummo and Edilberto de Oliveira, if I said that right, and a rematch with Nate Quarry and Pete Sell. Nate Quarry, of course, making his long-awaited return to the Octagon, hasn't fought since his devastating knockout loss to Rich Franklin way back in UFC 56, I believe it was. Another good free card. This one will only be about 2 hours, I would imagine, and it'll lead into the Ultimate Fighter Season 6, which we've already seen. We'll have some more illegal outside of the Octagon fighting. So it should be a thoroughly entertaining season. We'll see what happens with that. A lot of bad blood between Metzer and Matt Hughes, leading into their
November or December title fight. So lots coming up here, fellas. September is a huge, huge month. We still got two more UFC events to go. Still got that Strikeforce card coming up. Got a cage race coming down the pipe. Lead XT coming up. We got all sorts of stuff going on here. So, yeah, we'll be back to talk about it. And we will, I'll update you on when that's going to be. We'll discuss and then we'll be back. All right. And for Jerry Cataline and Mike Darkwick, this is Sean Addis. Thanks for listening.